No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
That was Sweet Honey in the Rock with Give the People the Right to Vote. Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Along with my co-host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So join in the conversation by calling in at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype your questions to BBSRADIOPR. Welcome to the show, and tonight we have a special guest, but first let me say hello to my co-host, Maria. Maria, are you there? Well, no, maybe Maria's not here yet. Okay, let me do a little rundown on what's gone on this week in D.C. statehood. There's been a lot to
Michael, I am here.
Okay. Hi, Maria. Well, there's been a lot going on in D.C. statehood. First, we have two new co-sponsors on our bill. One is Antonio Delgado of New York's 19th District. So, Congressman Delgado, thank you. And just in case you're getting afraid there that you might be falling behind, California might be falling behind, we also have Mike Levin, Congressman Mike Levin, from California's 49th District. And last week, Maria, you asked me how many California co-sponsors there are. There are 39 California co-sponsors.
Yay!
That makes you, and you know what? 19.5% of all the co-sponsors on the bill, the 200 co-sponsors, are from California. Second place is New York, and they've got 19. So California is way ahead, and California is my new favorite state. It's always been one of my favorite states, but now it's at the very, very top of the list. In addition to that, we had two historic things happen this week. The House of Representatives passed H.R. 1, the For the People Act, with language that supports D.C. statehood. This is historic. The House has never endorsed D.C. statehood before, and now they've endorsed it. It's actually got three paragraphs of the of H.R. 1 are dedicated to D.C. statehood. So the House passed this bill 234 to 193, and so now this is an official position of the House of Representatives that we should have D.C. statehood. And in addition to that, the Senate Minority Leader, Chuck Schumer of New York, said that D.C. statehood is a priority of the Senate. He said it's one of the top three ways to bolster voting rights. So all this week, we not only got two new co-sponsors, we're up to 200 now in the House. That's the most ever. We got a language passed that says that D.C. statehood is an official policy of the House of Representatives, and we had the Senate come out, the minority leader, Chuck Schumer, and say he's for D.C. statehood, and it's a priority. So very exciting news. In addition to that, tonight's special guest is Linda Green. It's great to have Linda on the show because Friday was National Women's Day, and Linda is a minority woman business owner And she, let me give you a little brief rundown on who she is. She's a great lady, by the way. I've known her for a very long time. And she's the owner, board chair, and CEO of Anacostia Organics, a 100% minority-owned medical marijuana dispensary in Ward 8. Linda is the owner of Anacostia Organics. They opened in January. She's the chair of the DC Medical Cannabis Trade Association. She is also on the executive leadership team of the Cannabis Trade Federation. She's the founder, chair, and CEO of a public relations firm, the Linda Green Group. She has been very influential in shaping the emerging cannabis industry in DC and on Capitol Hill. Linda serves on the Minority Cannabis Business Association Board of Directors, and she serves on the policy committee of that organization. She's a member of the National Cannabis Industry Association, the Marijuana Policy Project, and has served as on the steering committee of the National Cannabis the National Cannabis Festival. Linda, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Michael. I am so honored to be invited by you and Maria to be on the show. And Maria, happy Women's Day, Women's Month to you as well.
Yes, and to you. That's so great to have such an inspirational, strong woman of color who's such an accomplished individual. So thank you for making the time for our program.
It's my honor. Anytime. Thank you.
Absolutely. So let's just start at the very beginning, Linda. Tell us about Anacostia Organics. What exactly is it, and what do you hope to accomplish with this new business?
Well, Anacostia Organics is a medical marijuana dispensary here in Washington, D.C. Like you said, we just opened. We had a ribbon-cutting ceremony on January 24th. You were there, Senator, and Congresswoman Norton and Mayor Bowser. From what I understand, it's the first time that we've had any elected officials at any ceremonies for any of the medical facilities in Washington, D.C. And so that really just made my day. I was so happy, and it was so good to see the community, for the community to see you all behind us. And so we are, you know, in D.C., we do not have recreational marijuana yet. I understand that that is a priority of the mayor to get that legislation passed this year, since 70-some percent of the voters in Washington voted for it on a referendum. But we have 10 cultivator licenses in Washington, and now we have 7 medical marijuana dispensary licenses issued.
Well, let me just clear something up really quickly. We do, in fact, have legal recreational marijuana. We're just not allowed to. We're just, because it's so crazy in Congress.
Stops it.
Right. We're not allowed to do anything with it.
Yes.
We're allowed to have it, but we're not allowed to regulate it.
Right.
And that's just crazy. And let me explain to you why you had several elected officials at your opening. It's because everybody likes you, Linda. You've been involved in D.C. for a very long time, and you're truly one of the nicest people out there working in our community. And you worked not only on this issue, but you worked on many other issues as well.
Thank you, now, Michael. Let me tell you, as a little girl, there was no place I ever dreamed of living other than Washington, D.C. And I made that happen as soon as I could, and as soon as I got out of school to make it happen. And I have been here. I love this city. This city has been fantastic to me, and I think it's the best city in the world. I'm just really biased, but I do believe that.
Yeah,
what was
me
the
too.
Attraction to you? That early
what was
in
the
your
attraction?
Life?
Well,
yes.
Everybody that knows me knows that I get involved in everything. So that started even when I was in elementary school and junior high school and high school, just belonging to all the clubs and everything. And I was in the marching band for my high school, and every year because of our proximity to Washington, D.C., we march in Cherry Blossom Parade. And that's when I fell in love with it during that time. But I have always been a political wonk. And so just being in the same place where the power was and the political decisions were being made. And it's, plus it's a beautiful city.
Yeah, it's beautiful. We're about to have our Cherry Blossom Festival, which is a big deal. And if you're out there and you want to come to Washington, this is a great time to do it. And I mean, that explains a whole lot, Linda, about my affection for you, because my first girlfriend, I want you to know, in life was the bass drummer in the marching band, in my high school marching band. Carol was my first girlfriend. She played the bass drum, and I think she was the only girl in the percussion section.
She had to be. Well, I played woodwind instruments, so I was pretty
complicated.
Good at that.
Let me ask you something. How do you get marijuana? How do I get marijuana from your facility? Do I have to have a prescription, I assume?
Well, Michael, we don't call it a prescription because doctors are not able to prescribe it. So you go to a doctor, a medical doctor primarily, but you can go to an APRN, a dentist, or a neuropathic professional that is registered with the Department of Health. And you can give them tell them what your symptoms are. They do an examination, and then they give you a recommendation to bring to the Department of Health to get your medical marijuana card. So you could either take it to the Department of Health, or one of the things I'm really excited about is that we now have everything online, so you can actually do it online, which is cut the time of receiving your medical marijuana card down to 4 days now rather than weeks and weeks and months. So that's the process. So you would go to a medical professional that is registered with the Department of Health in D.C., and then you submit your application with your documentation to the Department of Health, pay the application fee, and then your card is issued. And then you have a choice of going to any of the medical marijuana dispensaries that are licensed to get your medication.
In the District of Columbia.
I'm sorry?
In the District of Columbia.
Yes, in D.C. In D.C. Uh-huh. And we have reciprocity with 17 states.
Oh, my.
Yes. And we're really pushing our government to just open it to any state that has medical marijuana patients. And the reason why we're doing that is because being in D.C., and, you know, we're primarily a government town, but we're really changing that, I think, with technology and other businesses. But being in D.C., we have over 1 million people to come to work in our city every day. Right, Michael?
Yeah, that's right. More than doubles our population.
Yeah, so because it's federally illegal, you cannot cross state lines with your medications. So think about people that are coming to work in pain or with cancer or bringing their kids in for one reason or another into the city, they cannot bring their medications with them. In addition to the fact, we have over 20 million tourists come to Washington per year. So they cannot bring their medications to the city while they're here, so they have to be in pain or hopefully they're not doing it illegally.
Right.
We want them to have access to their medication while they're visiting our city or working in our city.
Well, and you know, this is one of the really unusual things about D.C. because we are a federal city. I'm glad you brought it up. But you could stand in front of the building that I work in D.C. with an ounce of marijuana, actually 2 ounces of marijuana in your pocket.
Michael.
Four ounces of marijuana in your pocket, and that would be legal. But if you walked across the street to Starbucks, you could be stopped on Federal Plaza which is a federal, you know, owned by the federal government, and you can be arrested because it's illegal. Yeah, it's crazy.
Unlike most cities in the country, our federal land and our city-owned land intertwines, and you could be literally, just like you said, step off one sidewalk into another, where you could be from D.C. property into federal property. So it's very, very tricky.
Yeah. And, well, that's one of the first things you learn in D.C., too. When I grew up here, and one of the first things you learn are that there's so many different police departments. You learn to which ones can give you traffic tickets and which ones can't. You can't speed by a Capitol Police officer because he can pull you over and give you a ticket. And you got to be careful of park police and other. But the Secret Service doesn't pull you over and give you tickets. So that's one of the first things you learn in D.C.
That's true.
Well, tell me, Linda, what kind of conditions, what are the primary conditions that we know that cannabis helps? I know I'm a diabetic, and I know that it's useful in the treatment of glaucoma, which is something I get tested for all the time. What other conditions has it been proven to help?
The reality is it treats almost all conditions. I can't think of any that medicinal cannabis does not benefit. I think that especially for people that have cancer, PTSD, epilepsy, arthritis. I even know of patients that are using some of the ointments and salves for their sinuses to get sinus relief. It's good for everything. I can't think of anything that it's not really good for.
And you know what, too?
It's natural. It's natural. It's a natural plant.
Well, and insomnia, I understand, too.
Oh, my gosh.
It's a sleep aid. And we probably should make the distinction to people when they hear marijuana, they probably think getting high, but that's when you are having THC, which a lot of the medical marijuana products only have the CBD, which doesn't have the THC, therefore there is no high associated with the use thereof.
Right. That's true. And a lot of them have, in D.C., the labeling on the medications, when you get it from a dispensary, the labeling on the products actually have the amount of CBD and THC, so it varies. And it comes in various strengths according to the patient's needs. And you know, we have this thing about buying your medications from a licensed dispensary anywhere in the United States because of the rigorous testing, the lab testing, and the compliance and the inspections. And quality control, absolutely.
Well, and that's another crazy thing about not letting us regulate it. Because if you're buying it on the street, you don't know, you know, it could have pesticide on it. It could, you don't know what you're buying. We've had an epidemic in Washington on this, with this stuff. I can't even remember what they call it anymore.
K2.
Where, you know, it was just a horrible thing. And you know, people were calling it synthetic marijuana, but it really was different than that in a lot of ways. But let me ask you, what type of things other than, you know, let's say you're somebody that doesn't want to smoke this. Can you buy edibles? You talked about salves and creams and what types of products other than smokable marijuana?
Honestly, it comes in so many forms. It would probably blow you away. There are bath salts. There are ointments, tinctures, salves, edibles, mints, chocolates, I'm just trying to think. It just comes in so many forms. So in our day, Michael, Maria, I'm not looping you into our category. You say I'm being very careful with that. But in our day, We didn't have those options.
Yeah.
It was, you know, it was, you literally just smoked it. Or you had a brownie. But that was pretty much it. But now it just comes in so many forms, and the tinctures, you know, for children, theirs is normally distributed through a tincture. And for the very ill patients with very bad cases of cancer and other really horrible diseases, the tinctures were very good for them because you just put a drop or two under their tongue.
So they're a sublingual then. And the other thing about the ointments, my mom has had breast cancer and a severe mastectomy, and she's got lymphedema. And once her caregiver said to her, if you would get CBD lotion and rub it on, you would not believe. And this is before California got a little more hip with the program. So she was able to find it, and it was night and day, but she has such a philosophical resistance. She's never tried it again, in spite of the pain delivery alleviation.
Wow.
Yeah.
But you hear testimonies, you know, like that all the time. And we had a senior citizen come in to our place about with the first part of the week, and that was her first trip, and prescribed something for her because she was in enormous pain. She had, what's it, spinal bifida? Is that what it's called?
Yes.
Meningitis.
Yeah.
No, not meningitis. It's a, there's
curvature of the spine.
Yeah, exactly. And the patient care specialist recommended something for her, and we heard from her today that she has not been in pain, that she is just wonderful. She's just very happy. And, of course, she's using a topical. So,
and that's scoliosis, curvature of the spine. Yeah.
So now I have a marijuana card. I've gone through the process, and I have my card. Can I get any product you sell, or are there restrict? Oh, I can come in and get, you know, if I want to get smokable marijuana, I can get it, or if I want to get an ointment, I can get it. It's not restricted to a specific product.
No, not at all, not at all, and everything doesn't work for the same person.
Right.
So, you know, sometimes you may have to try a couple of different things to see what works best for you and what gives you the best relief.
And Linda, is there some science behind that, or is it trial and error, or how do you decide what's the best first alternative?
You just have to talk to the patient better. Now, some doctors who are making the recommendations, which I prefer for my patients or my friends to go to, they literally know what to prescribe or recommend for you to take down to the dosage.
Oh, wow.
And,
wow, wow, wow.
But then we have, you know, some doctors that don't go into that detail. But I'm telling, you know, my patients and my friends, if you're coming in for this, you need to know what your doctor says will work best for you and the exact dosages.
Yeah, and I can believe that. You know, I mean, one thing I found out from being a diabetic is that doctors know what doctors know, you know, what they've been trained to know. I had a friend that was a registered dietitian and a nutritionist, and she used to say to me, doctors just don't know very much about nutrition. And I thought, oh, that's just crazy. And then I got diabetes and I found out it was true.
Yeah,
you know, I had to go to a diabetic educator, and actually your doctors prescribe going to a nutritionist so they can tell you what to eat and what not to eat, because that wasn't part of their medical training. So I can see where that's very much true.
Yeah, the medical training is intense enough, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I got to ask you this question because I'm just intrigued by this. What is the National Cannabis Festival?
So the National Cannabis Festival is actually the largest cannabis festival on the East Coast now, and it was started 4 years ago by a young lady by the name of Caroline Cunningham, and she it's at RFK parking lot. It's on the football stadium, at the former football stadium. And so people come, and it's a lot of education. They have tents with a lot of advocacy. They have tents with different people in the arena of cannabis, highlighting their products. They can't bring the live products there. They're people that have written books. The DC Cannabis, the DC Medical Cannabis Trade Association, we are hosting the Wellness Pavilion at the festival this year. So we will be talking about health and wellness as a whole. And at this, a lot of entertainment. The lineup of stars are just incredible. It's a day of celebration, a day of education. And Michael, I guess you've never been, but all the other elected officials come in D.C., so you should be there.
Well,
it's a big day to speak. It's just a very joyous occasion.
When is it?
It is on April 20th.
Of course.
420, celebrating 420. So every year, celebrating 420. And then on 419, the day before, we started this last year, doing a policy summit. And we do that at the museum. So that's a full-day summit at the museum on policy
what
legislation.
What does that entail?
It is primarily a series of panel discussions and Q&A from the audience that have come from all over the country, but it is comprised of people in the industry, licensees, policymakers, activists. I haven't seen the lineup for who is going to be on there this year, but each panel has a different subject, and it was on PBS, I believe, last year. Anyway, it was live streamed or televised on one of the networks last year.
Was it?
And actually, Ben Jealous participated in it last year, and some other elected officials.
Yeah, Ben Jealous, who also is one of the nicest people I've ever met. Just a wonderful
and a
guy.
Big cannabis supporter, pro-cannabis supporter.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and, you know, and another statehood activist that I've worked with for years and actually got arrested with, Adam Heidegger. And I got arrested for sitting in front of the Senate and protesting the fact that the Senate tried to take health benefits away from poor women in the District of Columbia. But let me ask you, as a politician, since we've gotten on to politics.
Don't call me a politician, Michael, because I'm not.
No. I'm talking about myself.
Okay.
Yeah. And what I want to know is, I know that as we work towards trying to find a way to regulate recreational marijuana in the District of Columbia. Mm-hmm. I know they've had some problems in California and Colorado with this. What do we need to do to avoid? What are the problems that they've had with this, and how do we get around them?
Well, I tell you, the rollout is so important, and this industry moves so fast. It's you can't blink your eye. And I think that, and that's one of the things I'm doing in my position as chair of the D.C. Medical Cannabis Trade Association, is aligning myself with the city so that we can look at other models throughout the country and pick the best of the best to model our rollout on, because once you open a door and legalize it, then all of a sudden you have all of these dispensaries opening and cultivator sites and manufacturers opening, you know, that type of thing, that have not really been licensed. All the cities and states license a specific number, but then the black market, gets involved. But having enough of the how the manpower, the IT power, the data power, and everything to make sure that it rolls out properly in each state. It's really difficult, and but we've seen some good cases, some good, I think, Oregon's and Washington's were some of those that are highlighted as really doing it well as Massachusetts, but not only for the licensing part, but inclusive, making sure that there's some type of social justice part, residency, hiring practices, and those type of things.
So you mentioned, Linda, the black market, and that's one of the challenges we're having in California because the taxation is so high on the legit facilities. Uh-huh. It's creating a huge opportunity for the black market who doesn't have to charge as much because they're not subject to that taxation.
Right.
And I wonder if, because you're a little bit later to the game in the District of Columbia, if you have kept that in consideration.
Yes, that is definitely in consideration. And one of the things about California, it was out there before, you know, it's been in, you could find it in California for a long, long time before it was regulated.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
And so then, you know, so trying to pull all that in and then all of a sudden all these people who have been selling it and not being regulated or taxed or anything and, you know, all of a sudden they have to. So that's a difficulty and that's where we are because we are behind. We have the benefit of really just doing this right and do a rollout that is staggered, so you just don't open the doors and say, okay, we are recreational now. Anybody can open up because the recreational part of DC is supposed to be under our alcohol beverage regulatory control rather than the Department of Health, from what I understand. And the Department of Health will still keep control of the medical marijuana part of it. So then you got two different agencies that are still going to have to work collaboratively, you know, in this effort. So it's not as easy as just passing a bill and getting it signed. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of things that have to go into play before you can implement it.
So are you taxed? Are you taxed differently than any other business would be taxed since we can't regulate recreational marijuana? But we can regulate medical marijuana, right? So it, which is something I don't understand. But are you taxed, heavily taxed, since they won't let the D.C. Council regulate it?
Well, yes, we are taxed as you know, as any other business would be. One of the, you know, the problems that all of us in the industry in the United States have is that lack of banking, access to banking.
Right, that's right. Crazy, too.
That is absolutely crazy. And so we don't have the, you know, the everything is done in cash, which does what? That's a public safety issue because... Yeah. You know, your employers are paid in cash, your vendors are paid in cash, everything's in cash. You know, your patients have to bring cash. And so that doesn't, you know, really make sense. And I was actually invited to the New York Federal Reserve Bank this past summer they were having a full-day symposium on financial crimes, and banking and marijuana was one of the panel discussions, and our attorney general was a panelist on that, Carl Racine.
So you have to have security, is that right? Because all your
security,
business is
yes.
cash. Yeah. I mean, besides security cameras and things like that, do you have armed guards?
Yes, and that is mandated by the regulations. You have to have armed police officers. On duty, and so our police officers are retired DC police officers because Maria, I'm all about my city. I believe in promoting my city. I believe in hiring people in my city. I believe in putting all the dollars right back here as possible.
Nice.
Yes. So all the police officers and all my staff are DC residents and primarily most of my vendors. But of course, all my product must come from the D.C. resident, I mean, the D.C. cultivators in the city.
So here's my question is, since it's all cash, how do you skirt the whole money laundering thing that illicit gambling and the mafia and et cetera gets caught in? Is it, it's self-report?
It is self-report, but at the same time, everything is tracked. The tracking system from the time that seed is put in soil to the time the patient walks out the door with the medication is tracked.
Whoa. Yes.
So there is no way, plus there are cameras everywhere, so you cannot steal, you cannot do this and that and the other. But it's tracked DC is part of Metric, which is throughout the country, but you can't get away with it.
Tax evasion is a non-issue then?
Say what?
Tax evasion is a non-issue then?
It's a non-issue. For legal businesses, for those that are licensed.
Right.
For those that are not licensed, right. We have a lot of pop-ups in this town.
Yeah.
And they're not licensed, and they are not paying taxes because they're not a legal business.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you, since you brought it up, Linda, about putting money back into the community, and I know this is a wholly woman-owned business. What do you think Anacostia Organics is doing for the community? In terms of not just in terms of what you're doing medically, but what is having this business in Anacostia? And for those of you that don't know the District of Columbia, Ward 8, which encompasses Anacostia, is the poorest ward in the city. So what do you think your business, and we need to get more businesses over there. That's really, really important. So what do you think your business is doing for the city besides providing jobs? Anything else?
It's leveling the playing field. Anacostia Organics is providing medications, cannabis medications to our residents that residents in other parts of the city had access to and ours didn't. So we had the highest number, the highest percentage of medical marijuana card holders in Ward 7 and 8, Michael. And they had no access to their medication, so they had to get public transportation or get an Uber or Lyft to get to these other places. And, you know, it is the poorest part of the ward, like you said, of the city. And they had to expend additional funds to go get their medications. When they could walk to, you know, a drugstore right on the corner, get all the opioids that they want, Yes. So, but the other thing is that my dispensary is gorgeous. It's beautiful.
It's
I have
nice.
To say, and I'm not knocking my colleagues, but I'm the newest one, but it's really beautiful. And I wanted Ward 8 to have the most beautiful dispensary in the city because we deserve it.
Well, and you know, that's always been my position for a long time, Linda, that if you want Ward 8 to expand and you want it to do better, you have to put things over there that people want to come to, you know, restaurants,
right.
Entertainment venues, you know, you've got all that in Northwest. We've just seen in Ward 6, for example, this amazing expansion of the waterfront, where there are all these new venues, entertainment. I just went to some club over there for the mayor's party. I'm sure you were there.
Anthem.
And I couldn't believe that place. I couldn't believe how big and beautiful and amazing it was because I'd never been there. And I think you need to put stuff like that in Ward 8. I really do. So that people from Northwest and, you know, in the other parts of the city want to come over there.
I agree. I totally agree. But we are starting development here now. I think you know that Bus Boys and Ports. Yes, they are opening right next door to me. It's the parking lot that is dividing us, but we are next door neighbors. And then we're going to have the development of the Martin Luther King Gateway They are breaking ground very soon. And then we're the big chair, which is a very famous, what do you call it?
Landmark
in D.C. Those properties back there, those parking lots and everything are being developed with a hotel.
Great.
And then we're not far from St. Elizabeth's Hospital, where St. Elizabeth's grounds, where the Mystics have their practice facility and playing facility, and the Wizards practice facility, and it's a concert venue. So all of that is within a mile or less.
Wow.
Well, and you know what? The St. Elizabeth's project, St. Elizabeth's used to be the city mental hospital, but it's being developed into certain different venues. It's going to be it is the home of Homeland Security and other stuff.
Yeah.
And a few years ago, it was the single largest federal project in America. So we're really excited about that. And we hope that brings a lot of jobs. And again, brings people over that part of the city to work.
Yes.
Linda, may I ask you the time frame from when it is that you decided that this was something that you wanted to do and you put your hat in the ring and you found your location and all of the regulations and then the employees and then your supplies? What was that time frame?
6 years.
Oh. Wow.
So,
oh my gosh.
This just happened by a fluke, because I think Michael told you I've been in public relations and government relations for most mm-hmm. of my life, and as a publicist, as a fundraiser, event manager, as a political strategist, and all of that. And one time I even had a fur business, El Green's Furriers. So I've always been doing these type of things. And at dinner with BCG Holdings, which is the parent company of Anacostia Organics, Sherry Blunt and Yolanda Caraway, with the other girlfriends, and somebody mentioned that D.C. had legalized marijuana, and we looked at each other, and I should have known that because I tried to follow the policy, and I didn't know it, and we just joked and said, we should go in that business. Well, we didn't do anything, but 2 months later, we were together again. Somebody brought it up again. And the next morning, we got up and formed a company.
Wow.
Yes.
Do you know that? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, go on, Michael.
Do you know that Yolanda Caraway and I worked together as children?
Are you kidding?
No, we both worked at the DNC, and I was probably 25 or 26, and she was probably approximately the same age.
Yeah.
And we've known each other for a while. So
yeah,
that's great.
I didn't know. Book tour.
Yeah, well, I didn't know. It's funny that I saw her at the opening, and I hugged her and talked to her for a minute, but I didn't realize what her involvement was. I thought she was just there like I was there as a curious observer. So that's great. And she's great. And yeah, we all worked at the DNC back in the days when we had no money. Yeah. Ron Brown, under Ron Brown.
Yeah.
We used to, and even before him under Chuck Manatt. And we used to run to the bank to cash our check on Friday because we were afraid if you were the last one to the bank, they would have run out of money. Yeah. So
that
it's great.
Funny.
She's funny. So let me ask you, let's see, what else? What about legal marijuana? If when we do get around to regulating it, and they've got to let us do this, sooner or later. I want to say this for our listening audience. This is just crazy, because when they first passed this law in the District of Columbia that you could have marijuana, and then Congress said we couldn't regulate it, I went to a meeting with the police chief, and somebody said to the police chief, hey, look, if I go to see my friend Charlie, he can give me an ounce of marijuana? And the police chief said, yes. And he said, but he can't sell it to me. And the police chief said, yes. And then the guy said, well, what if I get the ounce of marijuana and on the way out the door, I say, oh, you know what? I forgot about the $300 that I owed you from the bar the other night. And I gave him $300. And the police chief kind of chuckled and said, yes, we understand that this is going to be very hard to enforce. And it is. Right. We really can't enforce this. So we really need to figure out a way to deal with it. And I hope that Congress backs off. But if we expand and we do get regulations, do you think that you'll be able to sell marijuana to the general public and other distributors will be able to do that? Or do you think they'll set up a separate apparatus for that?
Okay, so yes, I will be able to sell. So what has traditionally happened in other states is that those that are already licensed are grandfathered in and get are awarded another license for the recreational.
And if people, will they, you think, given the what's been done on other states, they'll extend licenses to people to only sell recreational and not sell medical? Or will...
Yeah, I think that that's the way, I think that, you know, that what that everything is in process, not in process, is being written now, the draft policy. But I think that that is the way it's, it will probably be that they can sell recreational rather than medical. I'm not sure, you know, how it's going to work here, but we're certainly giving them all the suggestions and advice that we can, because my thing is that we are the capital city of the world, not just the nation, and that we should have the most perfect rollout program of legalization in the country. And, you know, so many countries around the world now are totally legalizing. So I don't want us to rush. We want it, obviously, but I don't want us to rush and have a policy that is not going to work for everyone.
Well,
and what are the odds that you're going to be able to take the time to do it right? And not rush.
I don't think the mayor is going to ruin jeopardize her legacy on a failed marijuana program. I think that she will take as much time as necessary to make sure, just because of the way I know her, that she's going to make sure that it's done right and it's going to be a shining star.
And given that we're not allowed to regulate it, and you're a policy person, is there something that your organizations are doing to lobby Congress? I mean, if we become a state, great, we'll be able to we'll be able to make all these decisions. But is there other things that you're doing to lobby Congress in order to allow us to regulate it? And is there something that I can do as a private citizen?
So I am involved with several of the several national organizations, as you mentioned in the intro, but the and all of the various organizations are there lobbying Congress to legalize it in one form or the other, and you know there's a lot of bipartisan support on the Hill for legalization, but there are processes that have to go through. And I'm on the executive team, leadership team of the Cannabis Trade Federation, which I'm just very honored to be working with them. So we are really pushing the STATES Act. And the STATES Act primarily says that each state should be able to control marijuana, cannabis, legally and medicinally, as they so choose, without federal intervention. So that gives states the opportunity to really the banking system. It would help fix the banking system. It would help fix the 280E tax laws, because you know once you touch the plant, if you are growing, manufacturing, processing, distributing, Once you touch the plant, the 280E tax law kicks into effect by IRS because it's still a Schedule One drug.
And so, what is the 280 tax law? What does it say?
What does it say? Well,
yeah.
It treats it like it treats cannabis like cocaine, heroin.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible.
So anywhere from 70 to 85% of every dollar we make goes to IRS. If you're in an ancillary business, if you're a lawyer, accountant, an interior designer, in any other type of cannabis business, you have a regular business. We can't deduct any taxes, any expenses, payroll taxes, or anything.
Is that right?
Yeah,
that's
right.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. It is crazy. So we're getting a lot of support, and we're trying to push the States Act through. And that would also, get the allow us to have banking, that each state can say, yes, we're opening up the banks in our states. It would, it makes public safety a lot better. And it will also give the states the opportunity to, enact social justice laws and expunge residents in their state if they wish. And, they should just have the opportunity to run this business like they should, like they want in their own state, rather than
like
being tied
business
down by federal hands.
Yeah, like any business. Well, Maria, you want to ask the last question. Believe it or not, we're running out of time here. I also, before we let Linda go, I want her to give her website in case people want more information. You do have a website, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And what is that website?
Please do. Yeah.
That website is www.anacostilloorganics.com.
Well, that's simple enough. You want to ask the last question here, Maria?
I do. Linda, as a woman, did you feel that you were facing more challenges than a male counterpart might have, or is it gender blind?
It is not gender blind.
Really?
What a surprise.
It is not gender blind. And you find very few women and women of color in the industry, almost non-existent. But you still find very few women in the industry, even though in the past year we've made significant strides. But it is white male-dominated industry.
Good grief.
Yeah.
I'm actually surprised at your response.
Yeah, but I can see, you have to speak up and bring it to people's attention. And
wow.
I can see more inclusion in the past, year.
Since this is a cutting edge industry and something mm-hmm. that has faced discrimination for generations or decades, that it would be more inclusive and mm-hmm. more inclined towards diversity, knowing what it's had to encounter with people's prejudicial behaviors prior to the legalization.
Yeah, I agree. That is in the process of being changed because many of us and the organizations that represent the people in the industry are really saying this is what we are going to do. We're going to, and particularly the CTF, the Cannabis Trade Federation, we are, because it is all of the largest companies in the country who are on the board, we are definitely pushing diversity, and they're committed to it. Diversity
Good.
And inclusion, and very
Good.
Committed to it.
Well, and knowing you as I do, Linda, and knowing Yolanda Caraway as I do, I know you're both groundbreakers, and that things will be changing soon under your leadership. So
Good.
Thank you so much, Linda
McCarter-Green,
for being on tonight.
Yeah.
And we're going to leave you. We always leave with a song. So this is dedicated to our guest, Alicia Keys, Girl on Fire, because
I love it.
This girl is on fire. Thanks so much.
Thank
I hope you come
both
back
so
soon.
Much. Thank you.
Continued success, Linda.
Thank you so much.
She's just a girl and she's on fire. Hotter than a fantasy. lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire, filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away.
Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people their right to vote. Give the people.